Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
Welcome to Goals Question Time, and today I've got the pleasure of being joined by Chris Noring from Microsoft. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. So can you kick off giving us a bit of an introduction to yourself first, please, what you do within Microsoft?
Yes, of course. So, yeah, so my name is Chris Noring. I'm a senior advocate at Microsoft. I've been there for the last 5 years. So I sit in something called cloud advocacy, which means that we do a lot of outreach, content creation, but we also partner very tightly with another org called Microsoft Startup. And I think that's how you and me met, Andrew, in those circumstances. And I also should mention about myself that I got 20 years in the business and also a past in McKinsey.
Great, great. Yeah, we met at the Oxbridge AI sort of event, which was with Jenny and Uday and the team there, sort of showing some fantastic AI sort of startups. And I was really impressed by your engagement and that there from, you know, how AI is going to change things and encouraging these sort of startups. So it's great to be talking with you about this. So could we kick off? Could you give us a bit of an introduction to Microsoft? I know that might sound a bit weird, but, you know, a lot of people might still think, well, it's Word and Excel and it used to be laptops and all that. Where do you think Microsoft is now and repositioning, I guess, for us?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question, right? Because Microsoft started off building their Windows operating system. Even before that, we talked about Microsoft DOS, which I think many of us have been using at some point or another. And, you know, it slowly transitioned to have Azure become more of their, core business, I would say. And then, honestly, as of late, felt like we pivoted into artificial intelligence and made that the main course in this big buffet of offerings. You might know that gaming also is a big thing for Microsoft these days with Xbox and owning various gaming studios. So it's a company that does a lot of things and it does it at scale. And why it's, I think, particularly interesting for our podcast today is that Microsoft has really been all in for the last couple of years on anything artificial intelligence, and they've launched various co-pilots, AI assistants, and to try to integrate through their entire product suite.
And just in terms of the relationship with the likes of OpenAI, in terms of how does that integrate? Give us a bit of a perspective on that.
Yeah, so OpenAI is an interesting company, right? I mean, to my understanding, it started as a nonprofit. So the idea was just to, you know, drive innovation, drive research and see what we can do and put AI in the hands of everybody. So in a sense, democratizing AI. And with Microsoft coming in quite early to back this up, I think by now, I think Microsoft probably owns half of that. But the interesting part is that Microsoft hasn't just put all the eggs in one basket. They have really reached out to, on the one hand, we're going into OpenAI and kind of leveraging all the machine learning modules being built there and integrating that as part of our core business. But if you've seen the news, you've seen that Satya and the Microsoft board have definitely invested in a lot of other companies also, because large language models, you know, this kind of generative AI that we all start to hear more about is going to be everywhere. And, you know, I don't think anyone really knows which models are going to be the one that everyone's going to use in the future, right? It's very exciting, but it's still early days.
You're right. I think, you know, these different models and the different architectures are going to be different for different industries and for different organizations and sort of stuff like that. But it's an exciting time. So I've been 20 plus years in working with corporates and seeing how technology drives different business models and that within industries. And the reason I started that was back in the late 90s with the .com. And I was screaming about this internet thing is going to change your businesses. And, you know, it's, you know, Amazon, Uber, Airbnb and these types of transformations we've seen because of the internet. And we're now going to see a massive wave coming with AI and artificial intelligence coming that's going to disrupt lots of industries. So it'd be really interesting to get your thoughts going through that. So what sort of strategic things do you think organizations should be thinking about in how these things are going to change industries?
Yeah, so if I may share a story there, because I interact with a lot of companies and try to train them in various uses of, you know, AI tools, generative AI, Copilot, and so on. And so what I've noticed, and I should say that this is just a beginning of a data point, but it's coming across quite strongly at this point, and it suggests that people are actually shying away from using search engines to use your AI assistant directly. And I would say that's a huge change in the business model, because the way I see it, a lot of companies today, they are thinking about SEO, search engine optimization. How do I ensure that I show up on page one of Google or Bing or whatever search engine you're using, right? If that's no longer the case, what are you using instead? How do I ensure that whatever data I have, whatever business core value that I want to present to my customers shows up as part of their AI assistant? So I would say that the game is changing away from that given search engine interface to something else. And I'm not sure where it's going to land, and I'm not sure how people are going to integrate with that in the future. But I'm thinking businesses who have invested about their presence on the web and showing up via various engines now needs to have a think and sit down and say, AI is a given. We see users going elsewhere, especially developers, because that's where I see it the most, that they stay in their interface. They no longer go to Stack Overflow or Google just to find out, how do I do this thing, or why do I get this bug? But I can just imagine that the entire business landscape is actually kind of shifting away from search engines. With that said, I don't think search engines are completely going away, but I think they're going to be integrated more seamlessly, and you might not see them in the same way that you do today.
No, that's an important sort of interaction, and that sort of with the systems, I suppose, from an industry use application sort of thing in legal or consulting or advisory sort of type areas. I think certainly there's the going from, oh, I used to look in a book or I used to do searches and then I wrote a report. Now you're coming at it from, well, I'll get the AI to write the report and I'll validate it or I'll tweak it and sort of stuff like that. That's changing very much the interaction as well, isn't it? Using the power of AI for how businesses or people do jobs.
Definitely. I 100% agree with you, Andrew. I definitely see how people today should get used to this declarative approach of doing things, like you describe in a so-called natural language prompt what it is you want. I actually started experiment yesterday with Copilot on Office 365. I was given that access as an employee, and I was just amazed, right? It's able to generate entire PowerPoints. It helps me draft emails. It gives me insight on my Excel and so on. And this is just Microsoft, right? But I'm sure every core business, every business system vendor right now is thinking, how do I integrate AI? My customers are actually expecting me to have that, right? So I would say, on the one hand, yes, it's becoming more declarative, and my job is more kind of reviewing the output of the AI, but we should also get used to AI being our buddy that exists there in every single business system or you know, application I interact with as an end user.
No, very much so. And I think, yeah, I've been using it for well over a year now, the Gen AI stuff. And I very much now consider it as you call it Copilot, I call it sort of my assistant. And I've even given GPT names, Grace, Peter, and Tony with an I, because as you said, that you they talk about in the industry about prompting. But I just sort of said, well, if you talk at it as if it's your assistant, you give your assistant enough information to be able to help you to do a task. And if he or she hasn't been given a proper briefing, then it comes up with the, doesn't come up with the right things or it makes things up. So I don't see that using the assistant is much different to just properly interacting with an assistant is what is the way I would see it.
Yeah, I think that's a very good observation, right? And I love the fact that you're giving them names. I'm on the side of should I treat them as a human, but on the other hand, I feel definitely I'm being helped when I try to be very clear about what I wanted to do, right? It's exactly what you say. The more context I give it, the more guidance, the better the output. And I also noticed that there are patterns that say, well, if I actually have a long conversation together with my AI assistant, it understands me versus if I just do one prompt, which we call few shot prompting. So I it's interesting how fast something that just showed up a year ago feels like the most natural thing ever. Because I don't know about you, but for me, it's like I can't even live without whatever it integrates in my developer environment. Or, and I can imagine the thing I have in Office 365, I'm going to feel like you can't take that away from me, you know, in 2 months or 6 months or how long it takes me to be, you know,
But
get used to it.
I suppose for me now, we're probably the ones, well, you certainly are within Microsoft, and I'm probably a first adopter type thing. But in terms of getting organizations through the process of understanding and that this, I suppose my perspective at the moment, we've got to get people with more hands-on and trying these things. And I'm running a workshop in Oxford next week, and I'm doing one in London and Cambridge, just doing the basics, sort of showing them, sort of saying, okay, right, from this podcast recording, for example, I'll get the transcript, and then I will brief that. I will put that text in that transcript, and the AI system will do summaries, and it will create an image to go with it, da, 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 and those types of things that when I started these podcasts like 12 years ago, I'd have to get a dictaphone and get somebody to type it up, and then have to re-edit it, da, 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 da. So that process of getting people to understand and then being able to build their first prototype or proof of concept on an Azure, no code Microsoft platform. That's my view. What's your view of getting people through that process of understanding and getting them on board? What's your sort of thoughts?
It's a very interesting question, right? Because I kind of see people adopting this in steps. On the one hand, you want to be able to adopt it with the everyday tools that you use, which could be your email or, as you said, if you're kind of recording a podcast, you already see the benefit because you get the key insights, you get the summary, you're able to converse with your data, right? But in terms of adopting this, I think it's important that everyone sees the win. So I think that the first step is use it in everyday tool. Step number two is, how can I leverage the data that I already have in my business? I've had a lot of conversations when I was in Amsterdam recently at a conference called World Summit AI, where people said, you know what, Chris, we have a lot of data sitting around the company that we wish we had the time to do a dashboard for. So a lot of people today will be able to utilize that data because it's almost at zero effort, right? What used to take 2, 3 weeks and a data science team to build a dashboard today takes seconds, right? If you have the right tool and getting that key insight, I mean, it's going to drive a lot of businesses, in a very positive direction for very little effort. So I think key is use AI in the most natural sense, your everyday tools. Number two is understand I've got the business data and leverage that and actually grow more as a company now that I know my own data.
No, I very much agree with that, and I work with a Microsoft partner, Softools, who use the use those data tools and use those areas. And with one of their large clients, they've taken like 300,000 records of operational excellence material and used AI to analyze it. Because of course AI now, as you know, doesn't matter what language it's in, doesn't matter if one part of the business calls something a forklift and somebody else calls it a lift or somebody else calls it a hoist. The AI sort of knows that concept, and you haven't got to tag it. So the power that you can now get out, and as you said, I was amazed from from just a few clicks, and it's like this access now becomes available. It's good. So people are so central to the change of this. What, how are you finding the people change aspects from the IT, implementations or the people in the business that are going through these changes?
Yeah, I'm going to mention the word co-pilot again, not to try to place the business, but rather to place a mindset. So for me, co-pilot means that the AI tool is not the main thing. You are the pilot. So and saying that people are part of this, I would say yes, very much. We are actually the ones who's going to guide the AI tool. I don't think we are yet. We're decades away from the AI being, completely taking over whatever. And I don't know if we're ever going to get there. I know that people will always play a central change, and especially when it comes to, trying to shape various requirements for building or changing systems, right? People have always been key. Developer talking to a stakeholder talking to another stakeholder, and AI assistants are here to help us make things clearer and faster. And we're hopefully, I kind of see it as we all leveled up. It's like being in a forest. You're trying to cut down a tree with an axe, and suddenly someday someone's going to give you a car, which allows you to actually cut down 20 trees in an hour or so, right? So we are given a better tool, but for all of this to work, we still need the person-to-person communication. So I think it will be more important than ever that we people need to learn to communicate clearly. It's exactly what you said about your prompt. The more exact you are, the more, likelihood that you're going to get what you need. And it's the same thing with other people. We just need to up level our communication and realize that we are very much still part of this picture, but now with better tools.
No, I very much agree, and I'm positive that it does improve people's output and performance and engagement and that. And I'm just, from my fortunate education, I feel I could write these things before, but now it could be so fast. But somebody without the advantage of education that I've sort of had can also create fantastic output in that as well. So I'm excited by that sort of opportunity. So another key area that I've seen over the years, and I outlined in my book, was the fourth P, which is partners. So being able to engage with appropriate partners for changing the business model or for changing your sort of tech and AI now, I think, large language models, the data architecture, the cloud, the partners who can help you change how your business sort of works. I think it's so important. What's your view on how you partner and engage now with clients or other IT businesses?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question, right? Because as soon as AI comes in, it's going to disrupt, and there's going to be a lot of early adopters. We're going to see startups who's trying to do something new, and it's always going to be like there's going to be businesses who've been around for 30 to 40 years, and there might be an upcomer who might even have to close shop. But my point is, with all of this, and just to try to tie things together. Businesses today who realizes that AI is a competitive advantage, who will adopt, they will still be around, even though we will see a lot of other startups. But I think in terms of mentioning all this in the context of partnership, it's an interesting one, right? Because I think we're going to need communication partners. I think we're going to need tech partners. And because, changes don't happen overnight. If you look at a big bang, for example, right? You're not going to be able to just say everyone's going to use AI. Maybe that's possible if they use the same Office suite or whatever, right? But for most of these businesses, you need to identify certain part of your business where you can actually experiment. Like that's usually how you do it, I think. Like you don't go just big bang and try to change everybody, everything at once. You do controlled experiments. So I think in terms of partnering, as I said, the most key of all this is humans, right? So you need partners who are able to do these kind of transformations. We've seen historically, for example, how we had agile coaches who did agile transformations. I'm sure we're going to see AI coaches who are going to do the same, right? The people who come in and say, you got data here. Here are your key stakeholders. Here's how we can drive a very small controlled experiments. This is how we can scale. So I definitely see communication partners. And this is just my prediction. I think a lot of agile coaches is going to call themselves AI coaches, or we're going to get new AI coaches. But I also think that we're going to see technological implementation partners. But technology is great. And don't get me wrong, I've been in this business for 20 years and doing mostly technology. But I do see, more and more the value of actually being able to talk the language of the business. It's key to understand the business. Even as a developer, the most efficient developers, they understand the core underlying business. They understand when to build a system, when not to build a system, right? So I think in that, people who understands the core business are going to be the change makers. I wouldn't say technology is easy, but it becomes definitely easier with these AI tools. So I would say anyone who has the communication skill, anyone who understands the core business of the company or they're at or the domain, they're going to be the change makers, and then we're going to bring in technology partners. So yeah, my view on this is that it's same but different. But as I said, I definitely think we're going to see AI coaches.
No, I think it's a really good point that you make there, and I see it as well, because I go back to my early career when I was implementing SAP and ERP sort of type systems, and that was a huge IT part and some people change. And now I think that's really flipped, as you sort of said, the people change, the business process change, particularly when you sort of start saying, back to our beginning of our conversation, that this could be a very different business model for an industry. That change aspect is going to be much bigger, I think, than the IT area, because the partners will have the platforms that you can plug into and do your APIs. And you, as you sort of said, as a software developer, now have got AI tools that you've got as your co-pilots that makes the coding and that easier and all that as well. So I agree. I think the flip there is going to be into that partnering and people change aspect is going to be bigger.
What makes me really intrigued about all this, if I go to your own example with a podcast, when you in the old days used to spend a lot of time just transcribing and correcting and things like that frees up time for you, right? You're able to create more value because you don't have to do that anymore. And I think if businesses are able to identify this is not going to cost us time or money to do anymore. What do we do instead? So it's like a shift. It's very exciting, honestly, to, I think, to be in the C-suite level and just say, we don't have to spend time on this anymore. What do we do instead? How can we get that time back? How do we invest that wisely into more value? Because honestly, I think technology is here to set us free, you know. And I think with AI, I think we take a great leap forward. Exactly what you mentioned in the old day, how internet enabled a lot of businesses. It made them faster. You could scale. But now we see AI with like almost like an accelerant. You know what I mean?
No, definitely. No, I very, very much agree. And I agree with your point as well that AI is going to free you up to do other things. But like one example of a corporate I'm working with, you know, they're in the intellectual property legal sort of type space. So of course, a lot of their people at the moment are doing admin type things of trademark registrations and enforcement registrations and sort of stuff like that. And AI tools can do that more powerfully now, which, as I say, then frees up the people to actually do the bits of stopping counterfeits, stopping the people that are doing the bad things, which have got environmental impact and poor, you know, lots of other sort of issues that we don't want. But it frees people up to do those other things. And in my podcast example, I've now got over 200 bits of data and information that if I sort of say, well, can you write me an article now about AI and people change? The AI will go into my previous transcripts and say, Chris Noring said this, and Nigel Toom from Graphcore said this, and Yasmin from, you know, another organization said that, and it can build that for me rather than me trying to remember what somebody said 10 years ago. So it is empowering to really add value and creativity. So the final P in my view about technologies is performance and performance measures and what benefits are organizations going to get? You know, are the benefits going to outweigh the costs of implementing this and give more profit, or is it strategically going to shift your business? So I'd be interested to know how you think business benefits are going to come, which are going to go to pay for Microsoft or pay for the people that are going to do the change, etc.
It's a very interesting question, right? Because I have to go back one step and just look at how we look at investments today with technology, right? Because it's not always when we invest in technology to build a system or buy a license that we kind of see the value, right? Because it traditionally, I think we're looking at technology investments as a one-off or some kind of monthly cost, and sometimes it's hard to connect that to the business outcome. But on the other hand, you know, with if you do an investment today, if you're able to get some data insights from a dashboard, because you know the dashboard is powered by AI, I think it's much easier to see the business outcome of it, because suddenly you get key insights and you can say, because we had this tool, we got these insights, which meant that we can now make this much more money. So I think it will vary. Some technology investments are going to be seen as write-offs that you just have to invest because your competition is. But with other AI investments, you will be able to kind of track and trace that outcome. But in terms of metrics, in terms of measurement, it's interesting. As I said, it's hard historically to kind of track and trace technology investment and see the business outcome straight away, but we have to try. Honestly, I would just yeah, it's a very good question. I feel I wouldn't say I'm stumped on the answer, but it's like I've been in the business long enough to realize that more often than not, I'm going to say it depends.
I suppose the perspective I'm getting of it now. So, for example, this program I'm going to be doing next week, and these other locations, going back to what we were saying before about using GPT, doing text, doing images, and sort of stuff like that. I certainly see that if I was going to continue doing the same stuff I used to do before, then the AI saves me hours. You know, if I compare with what was I doing before, transcribing a podcast, for example, well, I can see that. That use case saves me 2 or 3 hours per podcast. My day rate is this. It justifies me paying $20 a month for the subscription to an AI system to do that. If I then add on top of that and say, well, it adds to my creativity, and now the quality of the output is different. And then I say, well, okay, you can then make a benefit and analysis of that and say, well, okay, that gives me some sort of benefit. But I think also you've got to, as you're intimating and sort of saying to, if you're a company, you've also got to say, well, look, I'm implementing this for strategic reasons because I'm going to change the way that I do IP enforcement or sort of something like that, and sort of say, well, look, this is going to transform how I'm going to do things. And we don't know yet how many people you'll save in the firm or what the new revenues are, but you will say that if I don't do it, my competitors are going to do it. And what happens if I was speaking at a conference, I said, what happened if Josephine Bezos, she comes along and uses AI just like Jeff Bezos did the internet? You are going to transform retail. Josephine Bezos, this new AI developer, the sorts of ones we saw at the Oxbridge event, they are going to transform industries. And if you're not in there, then the value is going to go to somebody else. So I think that there is a mix, as you're saying. It's quite difficult to pin down, but I think there are cases now where you can justify for short-term business benefits, but you've also got to have a view on the long term.
Yeah, for sure. And I think in colloquial terms, I think we call that FOMO, the fear of missing out effect of, like, if your competition have it, does that mean that they had land more customers? We don't have it. Or we looked at the old company that's not, in with the times. So yeah, it's interesting, right? And I, honestly, I love the fact that you point out the fact that you could ask people, how much time do you spend doing various activities every day? Now that you have AI, how much less time are you spending on that? And then understanding, what are you spending that time on instead? And does that mean that our business outcome is better? So I definitely see how people or companies will actually try to do some kind of inventory and say, now that you got AI, how did you transform per unit? What are you doing instead with that time, given, of course, that time is freed up, right? So it definitely gives businesses a chance to pivot. In a way that they maybe can't today without AI.
And I think that goes back to the middle discussion about the people sort of side of it and how you're going to work with partners to do it. So I think that really brings it back, doesn't it? You need to be thinking about how AI is going to be impacting your industry. What are the first use cases you're going to try, as you've sort of highlighted, and that to get the understanding. And then it's going to be a people and change sort of aspect. So no, it's been a fascinating talk with you, Chris.
Yeah, same, Andrew.
So
Thanks so much for the invitation. So.
thanks very much for your time, and we'll post up details for your LinkedIn, because you're doing some fantastic series of articles at the moment, aren't you, in educating people on some of these things. So just give us a little bit of intro to that, so that people can make sure they go follow that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I got this generative AI newsletter on LinkedIn. So my idea was to showcase to people how you could be using AI today in a very practical manner. I want to make sure that each and every issue that I kind of publish is actionable, because I've read a lot of newsletters and, big respect for what people are trying to do out there. But for me, as coming from a developer side of things, I like it when I can do something. Like, I've read something and now I can do X, right? So and this goes together with how we kind of write documentation and modules and whatnot on Microsoft, that we always want you to read something and then after that you actually have a new skill. So my hope is, by reading each and every issue, that you kind of learn a new skill for each and every issue. But I feel like, based on our conversation today, I feel like the new issue need to be about Office and the AI, right? Because one other mission I had with this newsletter is that it shouldn't be too much developer centric, even though I've been a developer for 20 years, because I firmly believe that AI has come for us all, right? It's come to make all of our lives better. And that's honestly the mission with the newsletter, is educate everybody and just make them see how much better you could have it. And it's not obvious. I mean, I've been living on the side of these things for the last year and a half, so I'm probably the person who's the most excited in the room to talk about AI, because I see it happening in front of me. I mean, and I'm sure you kind of have your you mentioned yourself, you're an early adopter. But when you are an early adopter, when you see the technology happen in front of you, you just want to share it with all the other people. I mean, I'm sharing this with friends and relatives, and they're like, what do you mean AI? Many of them haven't even tried it, right? So I'm just seeing, and I'm living this big transformation, right? It's literally like the early days of internet, and we're the first ones to get the modem,
Yeah, no, very much agree, Chris. I'm very much in the mid to late 90s in thinking about this, when the first sort of internet was coming on. I was preaching and showing people Netscape and Mosaic, and they were going, oh no, people online are weird, that they're never going to order things online and sort of stuff like that. And I think we're at the similar stage with AI now. It's, you know, hallucinate, it's my data, it's not going to be secure. All of these things that we know aren't going to be the case. But I have compliments to you on your LinkedIn newsletter. I've been using it, I've been learning, and I have. I've cut and pasted from your articles in and sort of tweaked things to try it for my use cases. So it really does work in that respect. So I'll put the link in so that people can try that out as well.
Very glad to hear that, to be honest. That was really my mission all along, so.
Thanks very much, Chris. Thanks for sharing your insights with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Please give the interview a 5-star like and subscribe for future interviews. Thank you.